Lavrak, a citizen, asked if there was any way we could put some language in to really, like, flesh out and like, speak to exactly what a campsite is, what we want it to be, how it should look, and not leave it with this, all this vagueness. Because the vagueness is how you get people coming in, perpetrators coming in, right, you know, starting firefight, forest fires, leaving trash, like
sewage,
right. All kinds of things,
like showers and toilets.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you know.
And you'd think Hudson being more of a city and, you know, having sewer treatment, I mean, a sewer system and everything, it's even more delicate how you develop here because there's so little left. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to give something over to some huge project that changes the nature of the city, you know, contributes.
Has nefarious intentions.
Right, exactly. It's just you got to be
careful.
Don't
you have a lot of building going on over there on the north side?
There were like 8 hotels coming here.
That's an exaggeration.
That sounds like a lot.
There's 4 impossible developments.
Jesus.
4. There'll be a moratorium if 3 of them get through. I think one is not going to happen. But
is it all on the north side?
No, it's like, all over.
It's all over.
It's south, Warren Street, north. So there's 3 different ones.
So that would bring the population of hotels to what count?
Oh, I don't know, because you got the existing ones plus that. You got
that's what I'm saying.
The Wick, the St. Charles.
Rivertown.
Barlow.
Whatever it's now. The Whaler.
Whale of a time.
Yeah, Whale of a time. Yeah. And then you got all the little micro B&Bs all over, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then what happens is you have all this, and the tourism sort of diminishes, and you're stuck with these empty buildings, you know, and they'll start crying poverty and everything and want more. So you got to manage this stuff carefully.
You got to manage it carefully.
Yeah.
I mean, Philmont, everybody wants housing for the people who live there.
Right. That's what we're trying to.
You know,
I mean, the
there's
city.
Like infill. There's like vacant land. There's like houses that are condemned, empty.
Well, there should be a
up.
Land
it's
bank
like,
that could come in and take those vacant lands and make them affordable.
You know, well, exactly. And you know that the county claims to be working on this issue, and Philmont is prime for it.
I wish.
They started a project, a housing. They hired somebody, the county. Mm-hmm. A housing director.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Just like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
The question is now, will they come through with actually doing something? And you got to figure out which communities will really, you know, step up to the plate.
Albany did that. Massive land bank.
Yeah.
It touched, I don't know how many towns. Yeah. And they're almost at the end of it now. I think they have maybe less than 10 vacant lands. And they started off with over 150.
Wow.
Vacant lands, houses. Some houses were as cheap as $1,000.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. And you got, you know, and then a lot of it involves state money. And, you know, Hochul says, you know, we have a housing crisis. She wants to get more funds for it. Well, she better because we need it. We have some good projects in the works here in Hudson, but they can't all get the funding is only given out periodically. Hmm. So they're in competition for this funding. And that makes it hard.
Huh.
They should have more funding at each round. You know what I mean? So that a community can get more than just one project approved and
so
financed.
Can I read something to you guys?
Sure, sure.
This was something that I found that was, this is, this was about our, this development issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is from a planning board meeting a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ooh.
In Philmont.
Tantalizing.
In Philmont. So Eileen Ordew, who's one of the Summit Lake Conservation Group members, mm-hmm. says, happy to hear it will be 125 feet from the lake. That's the distance that their property is from the lake. However, this is the meeting notes, so it doesn't sound like actual language. Mm-hmm. However, think lots of trees will be taken down. Was economic survey done or can be done? What will it cost the village to maintain? What tax base will there be for the village? A balloon test was asked for. So then the engineer, this is a year ago, May 2022, the engineer for the developer replies, a balloon test wasn't done as you couldn't see it anyway. And then Sophie Wedd, another person who's been working with us, says, concerns about wildlife impact. What value does it add for affordable housing? How would the village police tree removal? Doesn't fee subdivision layout map gives any real information? Well, that was got a little garbled. What is the economic benefit to the community? Okay, Andrew Personette of Clover Reach responds, those are all good questions.
All good.
And I don't really have answers.
Amazing.
Boom!
Amazing, right?
Boom. 1 year ago, same song and dance. Yeah, yeah. Same song and dance. We've been asking these questions for a year, and we get zero.
So when did you get to have a vote of no confidence in some of these people that are sitting on
you
these?
Don't really.
Well, I think there should be something. This board comes through. I have a tiny grain of faith that our board is going to come through and vote this down because risks to firefighters. Economic, passing off all these costs onto a poor village, basically, and the wildlife, the loss of this like beautiful natural resource that is at risk.
Yeah.
That. So I want to say right now that I believe in our planning board, despite all evidence of the past being contrary, and I hope they're going to come through for
us. One of the major planning board issues that's been before the Hudson Planning Board for now almost 6-7 years, they still haven't gotten an answer to one of their most important questions without going into it. But, you know, it's the Colarusso thing, and they just say it's one question that the applicant has never answered. So that keeps it all in limbo, doesn't it? It does. It has. The planning board won't make a decision until they get their answer, I think. I don't know. So it's kind of interesting.
It is kind of interesting.
You need a planning board with guts.
Yeah, guts.
You
know what I mean?
You do.
Your guts.
Well, I do believe that I think at least they heard us on Monday night because it was very powerful in Kumbaya. And I do think they heard that the community is against this.
Right. And you're going to be seeing them in the streets, not Anthony, whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah, because he's going to build his houses and take off take that money elsewhere anyway.
Exactly.
Yep.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
Wayfarm Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
Politician and not you, and when I meet face to face, yeah, don't be late. I'm just talking on the phone, yeah, I'm not gonna wait. When you're gonna tell me, you better locate. If it's taking up my time, then you're beep beep. Yeah, I'm trying to come through. Beep beep. Yeah, I'm bringing something new. Beep beep. Yeah, I'm trying to come through. Beep beep. Yeah, I'm bringing something new. There's no limit. I'm trying to feel it. Every time I see it, well, I'm gonna break through it. Gotta just be.
a band.
I tried to tell you all what was happening here. I tried to make you see I was telling the truth. I was trying to be everything you want me to be. I can't please everyone, I'ma let it be. Beep, beep. Yeah, I'm trying to come through. Beep, beep. Yeah, I'm bringing something new. Beep, beep. Yeah, I'm trying to come through. Beep, beep. Yeah, I'm bringing something new. There's no limit, I'm trying to feel it.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Claire, and I'm from Athens, and I'm 8 years old.
I'm Amelia, and I am also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, and bookish things.
And that's what we'll do today. We're often joined by our friends Georgia and Fatia. I don't believe they're joining us today. We'll see. I know Georgia's in the middle of a play recently. Her school is doing, I think it's called You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, or something like that at the Charlie Brown themed thing. So hope they're having fun with that. But I'm excited to talk with you all about some books.
Yay.
Or bookish things. So, Amelia, why don't we start with you today?
Okay, I've got a couple books that I think would be interesting. The first one is one I do not have, but one that is currently on my wish list. It is called The Radium Girls, The Dark History of America's Shining Women by Kate Moore. It is a historical nonfiction book about America and its history with the element radium, which, as we know today, is a very radioactive and dangerous element. But that was not known back then. And so the Radium Girls were the women employed to paint watch faces for soldiers with radium, because radium would glow and it was therefore it was useful for soldiers during the war. Unfortunately, they obviously had a lot of negative side effects after years and decades of being exposed to this very toxic paint. And that this book is about that and how the government tried to cover it up often. So that's what that book is about.
Sounds interesting.
It is very interesting. The Radium Girls is one of those historical like horrors that I am very intrigued by.
I heard about that too, but on a video.
Cool. That's cool.
The other book I actually have physically with me, I haven't opened it up yet, but I recently finished the book Tender as a Flesh, and I'm starting a much chiller book after that called The Witch's Complete Guide to Tarot by Patty Wigington, which is basically a how-to guide for tarot reading. I already have quite a few tarot decks, one based off the movie Labyrinth. Others are just different art styles that I find interesting. And this book teaches you how to pick your deck, how to protect your deck, how to do different spreads, what each of the cards mean, and basically how to, it's just a general basic guide to tarot, which I find very interesting. And I've always found this kind of stuff interesting. So I picked it up and I got it. It was a complete impulse buy, but I like it. It has very pretty art.
Do you know anything about the history of tarot? I just realized I don't.
I don't know the history of it. I know how it's used, how some people use it. I think the most widely accepted tarot deck is the what's it called? There's a certain deck that is like the most well-known one. It's the one I have, called the Rider-Waite-Smith deck is the most widely used one. That's the history of the cards themselves. I don't know where the history of the practice itself comes from though, but maybe I'll find that out while reading this.
Perhaps. That'd be interesting. That sounds like a good book. You have a couple good lined up. Very different.
Mm-hmm. Very different.
So is this from your to-read pile that you're trying to make your way through?
Of course not. I just bought this.
Because why read your to-read pile when you can add to your to-read pile?
Yeah, I was originally going out to get notebooks and, like, stuff to sketch in, and then I saw this, and I was like, well, I can't just not buy that. That would be a travesty.
That would be the worst.
Mm-hmm.
A real shame. Well, I hope you enjoy those, and then get back to your to-read list, perhaps. Although I have no problem with you adding to your to-read list. It's part of the journey of life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for sharing those. Why don't we hear from Claire and see what you have to share today?
I have 13 moons on a turtle's back. A Native American year of moons. Joseph Bronchak and Jonathan London. Illustrated by Thomas Locker. And yeah, it's all about the moons of each month. 13 moons on turtle's back. It's really good book right now. And if you want to look for one, here's a clue of one. The maple sugar. If you get this book, the one that we're in is maple sugar moon. So look for that one. That one's the month that we're in. That's a moon that we're in. Maple sugar moon. Because we're harvesting maple syrup. Actually, at my school, we're harvesting maple syrup.
Oh, nice. I love maple syrup. It's the best sweetener ever.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I've read that book before, but I love Joseph Bruschak. He's a really great author. He's written a ton of books. And Thomas Locker was an artist in the Hudson River School, and he lived in the area, in the Catskills. And then at some point, I think was in Albany as well. So he's somewhat of a local artist illustrator, but he did a lot of beautiful artwork that you can see in museums or you can see in books. It's really cool. Can you tell us a little bit about what the book's about?
It's about all the moons of the year.
What is the turtle part?
The Native people thought about it, I guess. That's what they used to represent it, maybe.
13 moons on turtle's back.
Turtle's back.
It says the 13 scales on old turtle's back hold the key to the 13 cycles of the moon and the changing seasons. And there's poems. The book's a collection of poems with paintings.
Yeah, it is apparently a Native American year of moons. It's a lyrical poems talking about the wonders of the seasons. Cool. I thought it was a Native American legend. It sounded familiar, and I read some of those in college for projects.
That's very cool. I'll have to check that one out. I like poems, and I like learning about Native American culture, and I like the moon. The moon is great.
I feel like there are a lot of interesting myths regarding the moon. It's something a lot of cultures apparently were very fascinated with. So I think the only one who hasn't spoken yet is you, Emily.
I am. And I don't have a new book to talk about because the last book that I talked about on the radio show is also the last book that I finished.
Oh my goodness. This is a first.
Yeah. So last week I talked about On Air with Zoe Washington, which is a sequel to From the Desk of Zoe Washington. And I finished that book over the last week. I had read about a half of it when I talked about it last week, and it continued to be very good when I finished it. So I don't have a new book to talk about just yet. The new book that I've started is an adult book, so I'm not talking about that one yet.
Okay.
Until I know if it's age appropriate for our youth radio show. But I pulled up some poems that I could share to celebrate the start of spring. I found these on poets.org. You can do a search for spring poems for kids, and it'll give you a bunch of different poems that you can check out. They have other themes too, but I went to the spring ones because I want to celebrate spring, which is a lovely time of year. So excited. I love spring. So I'll start with this one. It's called Cherry Blossoms. So I know we don't have those quite yet, but We can dream about the future of cherry blossoms coming our way. And this is by Toy Derricote. And here it is. I went down to mingle my breath with the breath of the cherry blossoms. There were photographers, mothers arranging their children against gnarled old trees, a couple hugging asks a passerby to snap them like that, so that their love will always be caught between two friendships, ours and the friendship of the cherry trees. Oh, cherry, why can't my poems be as beautiful? A young woman in a fur-trimmed coat sets a card table with linens, candles, a picnic basket, and wine. A father tips a boy's wheelchair back so he can gaze up at a branched heaven. All around us, the blossoms flurry down, whispering, be patient, you have an ancient beauty. Be patient, you have an ancient beauty. That was Cherry Blossoms by Toy Derricote, who I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing their name right. And that was from The Undertaker's Daughter. And
speaking of spring, today at school, when I came home, I saw a bee and I saw crocuses or tulips at school.
Wow.
Yeah, we have some crocuses coming up at my house.
Some stuff is coming up in my mom's garden finally.
Yay.
It's exciting.
For the garden to explode.
I'm ready for slightly warmer weather. Not too hot, but not too cold. And that's my favorite.
All right. So I'm going to go farther back in time for this next one. So this one is called Dear March, Come In. And it's by Emily Dickinson. Dear March, come in. How glad I am. I hoped for you before. Put down your hat. You must have walked. How out of breath you are. Dear March, how are you? And the rest? Did you leave nature well? Oh, March, come right upstairs with me. I have so much to tell. I got your letter and the birds. The maples never knew that you were coming. I declare how red their faces grew. But March, forgive me. And all those hills you left for me to hew? There was no purple suitable. You took it all with you. Who knocks? That April? Lock the door. I will not be pursued. He stayed away a year to call. When I am occupied, but trifles look so trivial as soon as you have come. That blame is just as dear as praise, and praise as mere as blame. Wee. Sorry, I don't know why that made me say wee. But it did.
Sometimes it's just what you gotta do.
That's what March says and April says, is they're coming back to us. Wee. Here's another one. This one is called Monadnock in Early Spring. And I like this one in part because I grew up in New Hampshire and there's a mountain called Mount Monadnock that I used to often go on hikes to. So it reminds me of that. So this is Monadnock in Early Spring by Amy Lowell. Cloud-topped and splendid, dominating all the little lesser hills which compass thee, thou standest bright with April's buoyancy, yet holding winter in some shaded wall of stern steep rock and startled by the call of spring, thy trees flush with expectancy and cast a cloud of crimson silently above thy snowy crevices where fall pale shriveled oak leaves while the snow beneath melts at their phantom touch. Another year is quick with import, such each year has been. Unmoved thou watchest all and all bequeath some jewel to thy diadem of power, thou pledge of greater majesty unseen. That's Monadnock in Early Spring.
Ooh.
Interesting to think of that kind of environment, you know, when you have the mountains, as we have the Catskills, where you're starting to see signs of spring kind of lower down, but you still see like little bits of winter in the higher areas, like the mountains still have.
Yeah. I have an uncle from Buffalo and he loves coming here during this time and seeing the landscape we have, because we don't think about it a lot, but we have a very nice view of the mountains from where we are in Hudson. And in Buffalo, it's more like just flat land, I guess. But it's very interesting and something we kind of take for granted.
Yeah. So I'll read a couple more. So I'll read one that's earlier spring and one that's later spring.
Okay.
So this one is called After the Winter. It's by Claude McKay. Someday, when trees have shed their leaves and against the morning's white, the shivering birds beneath the eaves have sheltered for the night, we'll turn our faces southward, love, towards the summer isle where bamboos spire to shafted grove and wide-mouthed orchids smile. And we will seek the quiet hill where towers the cotton tree and leaps the laughing crystal rill and works the droning bee. And we will build a cottage there beside an open glade with black-dribbed bluebells blowing near and ferns that never fade. That's After the Winter by Claude McKay. It has very satisfying rhyming to it. I liked that one. So I'll read one more, and this is my at least annual reading of this poem. I love this poem so much. I feel like I read it every spring, and sometimes more than that. But this is by Ada Limón, who is the U.S. Poet Laureate currently. And this is a poem called Instructions on Not Giving Up. And I forget which of her books it was originally published in. I think it was in Bright Dead Things, but it may have been The Carrying. But here it is. More than the fuchsia funnels breaking out of the crabapple tree, more than the neighbor's almost obscene display of cherry limbs shoving their cotton candy colored blossoms to the slate sky of spring rains, it's the greening of the trees that really gets to me. When all the shock of white and taffy, the world's baubles and trinkets, leave the pavement strewn with the confetti of aftermath. The leaves come, patient, plodding, a green skin growing over whatever winter did to us, a return to the strange idea of continuous living, despite the mess of us, the hurt, the empty. Fine then, I'll take it, the tree seems to say. A new slick leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all. And that is Instructions on Not Giving Up by Ada Limón. And it is probably my favorite poem of all times. I love it. I love her poems in general. She's great. So I highly suggest checking out some of her work. And you can find these and other poems on spring and otherwise on poets.org. But speaking of spring, I'm getting excited for one of my favorite springtime events that's coming up in May. First Saturday in May, to be exact, the Hudson Children's Book Festival here in Hudson, where we'll have tons and tons of authors and illustrators that write books for kids and teens in Hudson at the Hudson City School District at the junior senior high school to share their work and talk to people. And you can buy books, you can get some autographs, you can just say how much you like their work, you can learn about it. They do a lot of school visits when they're here. We're hoping to do our radio show again this year. Just have to figure out some scheduling around that. But we love doing the BookFest radio show every year where we get to interview some of the authors and illustrators that come. But it's really a great festival. And I hope everyone out there listening checks it out. You can see who's coming at HudsonChildrensBookFestival.com. But yeah, you should save the date for Saturday in May of every year, except it was unfortunately postponed the past 2 years due to COVID, but it's back this year in person. And there's a really great lineup of authors and illustrators.
I'm so excited.
Yay. So many of our favorites. I remember how excited Georgia was when the author and illustrator schedule got shared for 2020. And it included Kayla Miller, who's one of her favorite graphic novel comic artists. And then the festival got canceled. So she's been waiting 2 years now to, no, 3 years. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, 3 years now. Ooh, time flies. But yeah, it's going to be very fun, very exciting. Hope to see everybody there. Definitely save the date. Save up your book money. Is there anything you two are looking forward to this spring in particular?
Easter.
That's coming up. I'm excited for Easter too. So I'm going to.
So get your carrots and leave them outside.